Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Florida's new governor seems determined to quickly resolve all the issues surrounding the state's medical marijuana amendment.
Whether they have to smoke it or not, who am I to judge that?
Also this week, a more recently passed constitutional amendment called Marcy's Law is providing some interesting lessons in unintended consequences.
We're getting inconsistent interpretations and application of what that means around the state.
We'll also visit with the father of a Parkland shooting victim who now has the power to help make education policy statewide, and we'll discover why soaring student loan debt in Florida is forcing the state to consider expanding its popular Bright Futures scholarship program. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. Governor Ron DeSantis wants the Florida legislature to change the current law on smoking medical marijuana. Ryan Daly reports DeSantis is asking courts to hold off on a decision in the lawsuit challenging a smoking ban. And now even some critics of DeSantis, like Parkland parent and gun safety advocate Fred Gutenberg and former Democratic Congresswoman Gwen Graham, are applauding the move.
DeSantis made the announcement Thursday, flanked by high-powered attorney John Morgan, who led the charge against the smoking ban, as well as Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz, who helped craft Florida's current marijuana laws. The governor, in his second week on the job, is asking the court for a stay on its decision until mid-March, when the legislative session is underway.
I want to have the elected representatives write the law in a way that the people intended, so we'll give them a couple weeks in session to address the smoking issue.
And DeSantis says if action isn't taken on the smoking ban, he'll do it himself.
And if they don't do it, we're going to dismiss the case and we're going to move on.
On the campaign trail, DeSantis said he wanted to follow the will of the voter on smokable marijuana. His lieutenant governor, Jeanette Nunez, touts DeSantis's actions thus far, like his posthumous pardon of the Groveland Four and removal of Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel, as proof that he's listening.
This is about the people. We want to make sure that this administration is listening to the will of the people.
During his press conference in Winter Park, DeSantis commented on other ongoing high-profile lawsuits concerning medical marijuana.
I also reserve the right to resolve some of the other litigation that surrounds this issue. I mean, this thing passed over 2 years ago. You know, we need to have the people's will represented in good law that is doing what they intended.
Attorney John Morgan says he didn't vote for DeSantis, but is encouraged by the move.
He's read the constitutional amendment. He's listened to the will of the people, 71%, and the comments that he's made have been so encouraging to me that the people's will should be the most important.
While in the Florida House, Congressman Matt Gaetz was instrumental in writing the state's current marijuana laws. Now, he says, he sees things differently.
I wrote into the law initially that smoking should not be a part of the medical marijuana program. Now, based on the information I've reviewed and based on the court rulings that have already been made, I'm not confident that current provision of the law can pass constitutional muster.
Gaetz says he's also lost confidence in the way the medicinal marijuana market was set up. It's been structured with vertical integration, a higher barrier to entry that typically only sees players with the most capital get into the game.
I wrote the original vertical integration bill, and it is not worthy of continued defense. We wrote the legislation that way not because it was necessarily best for patients, but it's because that's how we had to do it to get the votes.
DeSantis says the vertical integration system created what he calls a cartel.
I think it should be horizontally integrated rather than vertically integrated. I mean, the way they did this vertical integration, that is not free market principles for sure. So I would rather it be opened up. You know, if you're going to do it according to sound economic principles. Yeah.
Florida's legislative session will kick off March 5th. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ryan Daly.
And while we're on the subject of constitutional amendments, victims' rights protections under Marcy's Law are now enshrined in the Florida Constitution. but many state agencies are struggling to interpret the broad language, most recently law enforcement. Sean Mulcahy reports.
A man was found dead in the street of a North Tallahassee neighborhood. Residents of the relatively quiet neighborhood were nervous. But beyond advising the residents that the crime happened, the Tallahassee Police Department was largely silent. After nearly 2 days of no new information, TPD explained itself. In a Facebook post, the office said it will no longer be releasing any information that could identify a victim in any crime. Damon Miller is TPD's public information officer.
We cannot give any information that gives the location, the name and or location of the victims, so that way that they and also their families cannot be harassed.
At issue is a line from the amendment that reads, a victim has the right to, quote, prevent the disclosure of information or records that could be used to locate or harass you or your family, or which could disclose your confidential or privileged information. The question is whether the victim has to assert that right or if it's automatically applied. TPD says victims of the crime are guaranteed this protection. Other law enforcement agencies share that view. The Tampa Bay Times reports the Tampa Police Department is following the same practice. The problem is it's not uniform across all agencies. The Leon County Sheriff's Office, which also works in Tallahassee, views that provision as an opt-in requirement.
We're requesting anyone contact us in writing that does not want their information released as a victim to contact us. Let us know which specific incident, and we'll comply with Marcy's Law that way.
That's LCSO Public Information Officer Dave Teams. He says the interpretation comes from discussions with legal groups across the state and from the Florida Sheriff's Association. First Amendment Foundation President Barbara Peterson says there's a conflict between public records requirements in statute and in the state constitution and Marcy's Law.
Because Marcy's Law is vague, you have the right to prevent disclosure. We're getting inconsistent interpretations and application of what that means around the state.
Peterson notes there are already a number of exemptions in state law. Those include protections for minors, victims of sex crimes, and domestic violence. Peterson, joining a growing list of state officials, wants the legislature to clarify. David Marcy of the Florida Police Chiefs Association spoke before the Senate Criminal Justice Committee earlier this month. He's not related to the Marcy for whom the law is named.
In preparation for this, I've also talked to a significant number of police legal advisors. And their overriding concern is the exemption of victims' information and the effect on Florida's public records laws. There are many different opinions on how to construe this, as there are legal advisors I've spoken to, and I've spoken to at least 10.
Jennifer Fennell, a spokeswoman for Marcy's Law for Florida, believes the language is clear.
Those types of information, such as names, date of births, that is automatically applied to the confidentiality. There are other pieces of the amendment that are opt-in, but this piece is automatic so that victims cannot be identified.
I mean, I just respectfully disagree based on the language.
That's Peterson of the First Amendment Foundation again. She wants the legislature to enact an exemption to protect this information. But, she says, there are a number of concerns, not just for organizations or the media, but for the public as well. There are cases where the victim's identity is important.
We have to understand motivations. What if it's a he said, she said, and we don't know who he is, right? So we can't fully understand the implications, and it does, you know, potentially impinge on our rights or our abilities, our right and our ability to hold law enforcement accountable.
Until the legislature or the courts take action, however, it will be up to each agency's interpretation of the amendment. Plantation Democratic Senator Lauren Book is drafting an implementing bill that would do just that. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sean Mulcahy.
Still to come on Capitol Report, the newest member of Florida's State Board of Education lost his daughter in last year's Parkland shooting. Now he's taking aim at Broward County's school superintendent.
His intentions were well meant, but by him doing this social experiment, it cost my daughter her life.
Florida Republicans at both the state and federal levels were busy this week doing what they believe necessary to help the panhandle of the state recover from Hurricane Michael.
Bottom line is, I want people in Northwest Florida to know, even though I wasn't governor when the storm happened, I realize that these things don't just right themselves in a day. It takes a long time. This is a long effort.
and Florida's student loan debt is increasing faster than the rest of the country's.
It increased by 35% from 2015 to 2018, which is a pretty big jump.
The newest member of the powerful state board that regulates education in Florida is singularly focused on ousting the superintendent of the state's second-largest school district. Less than 48 hours before leaving office, then-Governor Rick Scott tapped Andrew Pollack, whose daughter Meadow was killed in the Parkland school shooting, for the State Board of Education. Jessica Bakeman with member station WLRN spoke with Pollack this week.
I want to say I'm truly sorry for the loss of your daughter. And I know that since the beginning you've been saying you're a man on a mission to make sure this doesn't happen to another family. How do you think that mission is going so far now that it's been almost a year?
One is the bill that we got passed. There's armed guards, police in every single school now in Florida. More money for mental health care. So we got a lot done in Florida. That means a lot to me.
And anything that you're disappointed that hasn't happened yet?
Look at Broward County. We have that Superintendent Runcie, and he's going to stick to his legacy of creating an unsafe environment for children and teachers by still keeping that Promise program in place. There could be a better way of doing it. I don't want to see kids have a record if they commit a crime, just by being young and immature. And I don't want to see them staying with that forever.
What kind of program do you imagine for that?
I would want to put it in the hands of law enforcement. They're the experts. Introduce them to the judicial system. Some kids need it. And you give them like one chance with some good counseling. And then if the kids are good kids, when they turn 18, you give them a clean slate. Not like his program is. They give them multiple chances. His intentions were well meant, but by him doing this social experiment, it cost my daughter her life.
So do you think the Promise program directly contributed to the shooting?
Yes. It creates a culture of leniency, of not reporting and underreporting. The killer, he committed multiple crimes and was never arrested. It creates an unsafe environment for the teachers too, but the teachers only have one-year contracts in Broward. And they're threatened if they speak out.
I'm interested in what you said about teachers only having one-year contracts. That was a decision that the legislature made actually at the beginning of Governor Scott's term. The first law that he signed eliminated teacher tenure for new teachers. Is that something that you'd like to see changed?
Without really looking into all of it, I know it doesn't work. They have a one-year contract, and I don't know what kind. It's not really job security.
Okay, and recently I asked you if you were interested in running for the seat in the State House of Representatives that's being vacated by Representative Jared Moskowitz. And you said you wanted to do bigger things than, I guess spend your time in Tallahassee. So is this one of those bigger things?
Yeah, I think I could accomplish more on the Board of Education. And I don't know what's going to be with the elections in 2020, where I'll end up and who I'll be helping or campaigning with. Or maybe I'll just be in the mountains out there somewhere in my ranch.
What mountain range?
I don't know. We might be looking out west. My wife's from California, but I couldn't bear to have a California address. It's the politics in Broward. I don't agree with them. But maybe Oregon looks nice. Parts of Oregon are very red that I could fit in. So we're looking right now.
So you're saying it's hard enough to live in blue Broward versus living in blue California?
Yeah, I couldn't live either one. That's why I sold my house in Broward. It's just toxic.
So you sold your house after the shooting?
Yeah, well, about a month ago.
And this is like an RV? Or?
Yeah, this is my RV. I'm comfortable in it. For two people, it's good. And we'll see where we're going to end up.
So after Governor Scott, now Senator Scott, announced your appointment, you tweeted that your priorities would be making schools safer, increasing teacher pay, and holding superintendents accountable.
Yes.
What are your ideas for how to do those things? Let's start with school safety.
I'd like to go through the recommendations from the President's Commission and Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Commission. So there's got to be ways with the Board of Education to enforce those recommendations. We could penalize them somehow. In Broward, at Ground Zero, where 17 people were murdered, there's no sense of urgency with Superintendent Runcie.
You've been very outspoken against Broward County Superintendent Robert Runcie. What were the specific problems or mistakes that you think Robert Runcie made that contributed to the shooting?
Multiple failures at the school, gates open. When you're a leader, you accept responsibility for the people that work under you.
If you're confirmed to be on the Board of Education and Runcie continues as superintendent, there might be situations where he comes before the board. For example, he might ask for approval for a plan to turn around an underperforming school. Do you think that you could be objective?
Yeah, I could, but he's going to deal with me. You know what I mean? Mr. Pollock's not going anywhere, you know? Like my daughter, she's stuck in that hole over there in the ground, and I'm never going to forget it. And my first priority is removing Runcie from his superintendent job.
So what is your position on charter schools?
I like it because it gives parents a choice. Like, why would anyone in Broward want to send their kid now to a public school to deal with a superintendent like Runcie? I visited the charter schools where we have a program that we were implementing called Class Watch. My non-for-profit works with parents to have like a parent watch at drop-off and dismissal, because parents are encouraged to have participate volunteer hours with charter schools, which I like parent involvement. So the parents go in the morning and at drop-off, and they volunteer, and there's just an extra set of eyes at the school. It's less bureaucracy when it comes to the charter schools, and there's people running it that care.
And what do you think about vouchers, scholarships that students can use to go to private schools that are paid for by the government or through a tax credit?
The temple that I belong to, they have a school, a Hebrew school, a yeshiva, and they get a lot of money from the state to help kids with that voucher to subsidize their tuition. So I'm all for it.
That was Andrew Pollock, the newest member of Florida's State Board of Education and father of a Parkland school shooting victim. He spoke with Jessica Bakeman from member station WLRN in Miami. Hurricane Michael tore apart northwest Florida back in October, leaving more than 20 million cubic yards of debris. As Blaise Ganey reports, moves were made at both the state and federal levels to try and help the recovery efforts.
Governor Ron DeSantis announced Monday while in the panhandle that he would rush funds for debris cleanup and other storm-related recovery.
I'm instructing my Department of Emergency Management to green light some of the money for debris removal.
Florida Division of Emergency Management Director Jared Moskowitz says it won't be easy with the budget the counties have.
It's an impossible task when you have a $5 or $10 or $15 or $20 million annual budget, but yet just the debris is two or three times your annual budget.
To help local budgets, DeSantis wants the Federal Emergency Management Agency to help pay a higher percentage of the total cost.
I am going to talk to the president about increasing the share of FEMA reimbursable. I think that this warrants it. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff going on in Washington right now. It's not the best of times, but I think that that would be very good for the local community.
Meanwhile, in Washington this week, the Senate blocked a bill that would provide $12.1 billion to help communities recover after Hurricane Michael and other recent natural disasters. Before the bill was rejected, Panhandle Republican Congressman Neil Dunn warned the House of the outcome.
House Democrats chose to play political games rather than help our victims. They knew full well when they inserted this poison pill continuing resolution at the 11th hour that they doomed any chance of this bill passing the Senate.
The amendment added by the Democrats would reopen and fund the government until February 8th. Dunn insists that addition ruins an otherwise good bill.
Today, we will be voting on a bill that we had been told would be a standalone emergency funding bill addressing only the 2018 disasters, unencumbered by hot-button divisive issues. Unfortunately, we are voting on a very different bill. House Democrat leadership pulled a bait and switch at the last minute and made this otherwise good bill into an attack on President Trump.
President Trump has said that he will not support any spending bill that doesn't include funding for a southwest border barrier. This proposal specifically prohibits any funds being spent to plan, develop, or construct a barrier along the southwest border. For WFSU News, I'm Blaze Ganey.
Governor Ron DeSantis filled yet another state agency corner office today. The appointment is for Kevin J. Tebalt, executive with Trans Systems Corporation, to serve as Secretary of the Florida Department of Transportation. In his most recent job, Tebalt was responsible for the management of $40 million in revenue and close to 200 employees. As FDOT head, he'll manage more than $10 billion and oversee some 6,500 workers. But that may not be as much of a stretch as it appears. Before getting into the private sector, Tebalt spent around 16 years with the Department of Transportation in various management-level jobs. But if Governor DeSantis was hiring today, he was also firing. Susan Bucher is no longer Palm Beach County's election supervisor. Governor DeSantis suspended her today for violating laws and failing to meet recount deadlines after last year's midterm elections.
The Palm Beach County office failed to report the number of ballots canvassed as required by Florida law and did not complete the state-mandated recount until 50 days after the election. Palm Beach County stands alone in that level of ineptitude.
Bucher, a Democrat, has blamed the counting delays on old tabulation equipment. Ann Gannon is Palm Beach County's elected tax collector and is also a Democrat. She said the suspension is misguided and politically motivated.
If he can do that to Susan Bucher, he can do it to anybody that he determines under whatever standards that they need to be removed from office. We have a huge Democratic base in West Palm Beach. Is he going to remove the Democratic mayor because they do some minor thing?
Gannon said Bucher told her she plans to challenge the suspension in court. DeSantis appointed Republican Wendy Link as Bucher's replacement. Link is a West Palm Beach real estate attorney. You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, Florida's Bright Futures Scholarship Program may be getting a $25 million boost. Lawmakers will consider a request next week by the State Department of Education to increase funding due to higher-than-expected student participation. The program got $520 million this year for merit-based scholarships to high school students who attend a Florida college or university. The requested increase comes as student loan debt has jumped in Florida in recent years. Orlando, Tampa, and Miami are among the top cities nationally that had the biggest jumps. A study released last month by the credit reporting agency Experian finds that Florida's student loan debt is growing at a faster pace than all other states. Even so, a separate study by the personal finance website WalletHub last summer shows Florida graduates have less student loan debt overall than the rest of the country. So why are Florida graduates amassing more debt these days, and are they worse off because of it? Florida Public Radio's Gina Jordan spoke with Mark Kantrowitz, publisher and vice president of research at SavingForCollege.com.
The total outstanding student loan debt in Florida is just under $90 billion, and it increased by 35% from 2015 to 2018, which is a pretty big jump. The cause of the rising debt could be not just from college graduates graduating with more debt in Florida, which can be caused by the failure of government grants to keep pace with increases in college costs. It could also be from people moving to Florida and retiring with their student loan debt.
So as far as why Florida had such a drastic jump in the last few years and why Florida's debt is climbing at a faster rate than anywhere else in the country, nothing definitive really, it sounds like.
There's nothing really definitive. There isn't enough data to point to any particular cause of it. And Florida, it's one of the top 10 states with regard to college students. But that doesn't explain the increase. Florida has a pretty generous state grant program called the Bright Futures Program. If it hasn't kept pace with the increase in college costs, that could be a potential cause. And it could be particular cities are contributing significantly. Typically, the more populous cities are the ones that are going to have the highest amount of student loan debt. But overall, it's not really clear what's causing this.
At the same time, last summer we have this WalletHub study that says Florida graduates have less student loan debt overall than most other states. So does Florida still, even with the recent jump, does Florida still look pretty good compared to other states?
Just because there's been an increase doesn't mean that the average debt at graduation isn't more attractive. There's some data that shows that the states that have more debt tend to also have more jobs. So, for example, the New England states tend to have higher average debt at graduation, but the students from those states aren't defaulting on their student loans, partly because they are able to get jobs that pay well enough to avoid the financial pressure that causes some borrowers to default on their student loans.
Well, and I guess it's also worth asking the question, in general, does Florida charge less for tuition than a lot of other states?
Florida's public colleges tend to be among the more affordable public colleges, which is partly why it's so strange that there would be such a big increase in the amount of debt among people who have student loans in Florida. But the figures for the population with student loan debt includes not just recent college graduates, but also people who have had their debt for years, and not just people who graduated from Florida colleges, but also people who graduated from colleges in other states. I mean, where would you rather retire? In Florida, where it's warm and sunny, or in one of the northern states where there's a lot of snow and it's cold in the winters?
Do you see any upside to a student getting this kind of debt in college?
Well, the key is to keep your debt at graduation in sync with your income after graduation. If your total student loan debt is less than your annual starting salary, you'll be able to repay your student loans in 10 years or less. That's a reasonable and affordable amount of student loan debt.
What's the big picture for Florida and student loan debt?
We don't really have a student loan problem so much as a college completion problem. Students who drop out of college are four times more likely to default on their student loans, and they represent about two-thirds of the defaults. So we have a significant number of college-capable students who aren't pursuing a college education because they can't afford the cost.
Mark Kantrowitz with SavingForCollege.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That piece by Florida Public Radio's Gina Jordan. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Ken Smith, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And please join us again next week at this time for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.